I'm Tom Rowe in Anchor, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning we will hear from Times Union reporter Roger Hannikin-Gilson, his first appearance on WGXC and his new segment on Thursday mornings, updating listeners on the stories he is covering. We'll also hear from Irma Johnson discussing medical relief for Ukraine, and we'll hear from artist Lisa Schoenberg about her show, The Insects Are Present. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Airwaves controlled.
The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Do you enjoy the arts, have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members and get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community radio on 90.7 FM WGXC. On Thursday, August 10th, at around 9:15 a.m., Roger Hannikin-Gilson will make his first weekly appearance on the WGXC Morning Show, talking about what stories he's been working on in the Times Union this week and their coverage of the Hudson Valley. At 11 a.m., we head to Mali with Transformational Listening. And at noon, Andy French has Crawl Out from the Fallout with all sorts of new music until 2 p.m., when it's time for the court calendar and the campaign trail on What's the Frequency, Kenneth. Then there's a half hour of radio silence at 3 p.m. on Turn on the News. And the Vienna Radia Collective takes over on the Radia Show at 3:30 p.m. with International Radio Art. At 8 p.m., we're live from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill with the performances from Huntress and the Holder of Hands, Footings, and Strawberry Runners. At 9 p.m., we're live in Toronto with the pirate radio show Disco 3000. And at 10 p.m., the Magic Stranger beams in from Columbia County on 90.7 FM WGXC. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, August 10th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Juliet Pennyman is the new superintendent of the Hudson City School District on a unanimous vote of the school board on August 8th. Pennyman will be paid $189,630. And said, quote, "I am committed to being supportive of the whole child and engaging with the community by listening and learning. Every decision will be made with the children's best investment in mind. Hudson is a perfect example of a district that understands the importance of strong, safe, excellent schools," unquote. Cheryl Rabinowitz continues as interim superintendent through when Pennyman takes over September 1st. Then Rabinowitz will return to her permanent position as the Hudson City School District Manager of Instructional Technology and Data Protection Officer. Pennyman was previously Associate Dean of Academic Services at Cheney University in Pennsylvania, and she was Interim Superintendent of the Niskayuna Central School District in 2021 and 2022. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. New York State of Politics reports that while Governor Kathy Hochul's plan to build 800,000 new housing units in 10 years was not passed by the legislature this year, some lawmakers are cheering her recent executive actions addressing the affordable housing crisis. Hochul wanted to build apartment units close to mass transit so people without cars could travel to and from work. And this week, 143 new apartments opened in Westchester County near the Metro North station in Harrison. State Assembly member Dana Levenberg of Ossining said Hochul seems to have heard what legislators told her about the issue. Levenberg said, quote, "I'm not going to say she's bridging the divide, but she's taking action outside the legislative process. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I absolutely agree with her that we must ignite a fire under our housing stock situation. Now what she's doing is exactly what the legislature had wanted to do, which was to offer more carrots than sticks," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And Jim Farber reports in the New York Times that Robbie Robertson, the lead guitarist and a singer for the band, has died at age 80. The band is perhaps the musical act most associated with the Hudson Valley. Their album Music from the Big Pink was composed partly in Big Pink, a house shared by bassist singer Rick Danko, pianist singer Richard Manuel, and organist Garth Hudson in West Saugerties, New York. In the summer of 1967, the band lived with Bob Dylan in Woodstock, New York, recording songs that would later appear on the double album The Basement Tapes. Martin Scorsese recorded The Last Waltz film in 1976 with the band and worked on his soundtracks with Robertson, including The Color of Money, The Irishman, and the forthcoming Killers of the Flower Moon. Read more about this story in the New York Times, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Cyber criminals are determined to disrupt our systems and our lives. Their intent is nothing but malicious, statement of fact, and they're only getting more brazen.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has announced a statewide cybersecurity protection strategy. This comes after the White House held its first cybersecurity summit aimed at addressing ransomware attacks on U.S. public schools. According to FBI data, more than 25,000 New Yorkers were victims of cyber attacks in the last year. The new strategy will provide increased cybersecurity services to county and local governments and allocate funds to expand the state's cybersecurity workforce. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal has reintroduced the Ghost Guns and Untraceable Firearms Act. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives reported the number of recovered and traced ghost guns increased by more than 1,000% between 2016 and 2021, and many have been tied to unsolved crimes across the country. By including unfinished frames and receivers in the federal definition of a firearm, people would have to undergo background checks before purchasing these kits. During a 2021 hearing, Blumenthal said the guns are created with the intent of bypassing federal regulations.
They will make a mockery of all other common sense gun safety steps. They will render meaningless background checks and other common sense regulation that now apply to make America safer.
While the 2024 election is still more than a year away, New Mexico election workers are still facing fallout from the last presidential election. A Brennan Center survey found 45% of respondents are concerned about their safety amid increased threats from voters questioning the validity of elections. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says it has become an ongoing part of being an election worker.
They are still dealing with this stuff. They are still suffering. They are still being harassed. They're still being attacked. That's the state we're in now, in early August, 15 months before a presidential election.
New Mexico was one of several states where the former president is accused of trying to persuade state officials to swing the election his way. The first over-the-counter birth control pill will be released early next year, and reproductive rights advocates are taking action to ensure access. Nevada Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto introduced the Affordability is Access Act, which would set up requirements for insurance coverage and access. Lindsay Harmon with Planned Parenthood Votes Nevada says the time to take action is now.
We are looking to cover a full spectrum of health care because we know that in this country, elected officials, particularly those who are anti-women and anti-choice and anti-trans, are coming and targeting, you know, every part of a person's reproductive health care.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. With an unofficial 57% to 43% margin, Ohio voters soundly defeated the effort by the Republican majority legislature to raise the threshold for passage of citizen ballot initiatives. Issue 1 would have also required minimum numbers of qualifying signatures in 88 counties rather than the current 44. Almost 700,000 citizens voted early, and just over 3 million votes were cast out of just under 8 million registered voters, 38.5%. Turnout for last year's primary election was 52%. Still, the legislature's tactic to slip Issue 1 past voters in a historically low turnout August election failed, with heavy turnout around Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati, according to the Associated Press. With the 50% plus one threshold preserved, voters now consider the Ohio Right to Make Reproductive Decisions initiative, which has already gathered the signatures necessary to qualify for the ballot. A USA Today Suffolk University poll suggests that 58% of Ohioans support the November initiative. Ohio will be the seventh state to consider a referendum on abortion rights. California, Vermont, and Michigan enshrined reproductive freedom in their constitutions, while voters in Kansas, Kentucky, and Montana defeated efforts to limit abortions in their states. We have links to details on Issue 1's defeat and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, August 10th. Local early morning temperatures range from 56 degrees in Tannersville and Steventown to 63 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 79 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. However, air quality will be medium because smoke is once again invading from Canada. Our neighbors to the south in Pennsylvania and around the city are getting smoke from all the way on Canada's west coast, while we're enjoying more of a Quebec flavor today, coming straight from the north. Not sure how long that's going to linger. Hopefully it clears out within a day or two. Today is going to be rainy, especially this afternoon. People may even hear some thunder. A high of 78 happens at 3 p.m. Rain comes to an end around midnight. We see a low of 61 degrees before we get a nice looking Friday with a high of 80 at 4 p.m. Cloud cover will be low, so protect from the sun. 55 comfy sleeping degrees overnight takes us into a questionable Saturday. It gets pretty warm, hitting 85 degrees and dropping some rain in the afternoon. Sunday looks humid, possibly rainy with a high of 82. Today's tide schedule is low tide will be at 5:42 a.m. High tide will be at 11:10 a.m. Low tide will be at 5:40 p.m. And high tide will happen once again at 11:40 p.m. Today's river temperature will be... Skodak is still down, but Poe-Town is online, and it does seem that we have crested the summer heat wave. So it's going to steadily drop from here on out, most likely, and we are currently at about 74 degrees up here. It's a churning cauldron, especially with recent rain, so, expect that to fluctuate if you actually try to measure it. Today's tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:51 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:54 a.m. Looking way up, we see the poles are lit up right now with an S1 class solar radiation storm. It was brought on by recent successive flares that accelerated otherwise normal floating protons in the stellar neighborhood. X-class flare chances have dropped to 5% today, so maybe that will relax. Plasma winds will be slow at 368 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than one proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 103, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. That is it.
Where am I? There I am. We're here on the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe. We're listening to a little band as Robbie Robertson passed away yesterday at the age of 80, or I guess it was announced yesterday. You're tuning into WGXC ACRA Creative Community Radio, and we are live from Hudson this morning, and we are joined by Roger Hannigan Gilson, the Times Union writer who writes mostly or all about the Hudson Valley, I guess, right?
Yeah, exclusively Hudson Valley, 90% of which is, you know, Twin Counties, Columbia Green.
And what did you do before the Times Union? What is your journalism background, I guess?
Oh, journalism background. Okay, well, I went to SUNY New Paltz, graduated their journalism program, interned at the Legislative Gazette, where, like, you know, Alan Chartok was kind of, you know, not involved in the daily operations, but, you know, you saw him and stuff, and, you know, quite the character. And then freelanced. I worked for the Hudson Register Star for about 2.5 years. Quit that job to start a news blog, the Other Hudson Valley, which I did for 4 years. You know, it was good. People read it. I did some good stuff. Never became, like, economically sustainable. Freelance for a bunch of publications for a year, and then started at the Times Union a bit more than 2 years ago.
And that was right about when they started a major focus on the Hudson Valley, or was it before
that? Yeah, I was kind of like part of that. I was, like, me and another person were like the first hires as to the expansion in the Hudson Valley. And now, you know, we've got 6 people, like, full-time covering that area.
And, usually this area, we're used to contractions and less journalism. At least the last decade or two, more publications have gone away. But Times Union coming into the Hudson Valley has actually increased things, and Porcupine Soup starting. There's actually a little bit more journalism in this desert of journalism.
Exactly. That was the term I was going to use. And it's, like, fantastic. And I really like Porcupine Soup. Like, you know, it's a great publication. Why did we do it, and, like, why is it a good thing? Like, you know, that's kind of like, I'm a reporter. I don't know, like, the business intents of the Hearst company, but, you know, all the reporters that are in the Hudson Valley team and why, like, we do what we're doing is that, yeah, it was a news desert.
I started coming up here, you go to town meetings and there would be a reporter or two, and now you go to town meetings and there's often not a reporter or two.
No, I was talking to someone, they were like a town councilman, I think it was Armenia in northern Dutchess County, and they were like, you know, like 20 years ago, like, we'd have school board meetings, there'd be a press table, there'd be like 7-8 outlets there. We haven't had a reporter here in a couple years at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, it's sad.
That's crazy.
So there was like a news desert, and I'm not saying there's not like legitimate publications in Columbia County. You know, Gossips of Rivertown, like I read all the time. The Columbia paper is quite good, but you know, I honestly think there needs to be like at least 3 strong outlets covering like everything for there to be transparency. And you know, this certainly isn't that. And but with like the Times Union expansion. And, you know, like Porcupine Soup coming up, you know, is more in that direction.
All right. We're speaking with Roger Hannigan Gilson from the Times Union. What stories have you been working on this week?
Well, many a story, but the two, you know.
We've got one big yeah. horrible story that is a recurring big horrible story locally.
So on Tuesday, a 16-year-old teenager, like, you know, a kid, a boy from Brooklyn was with a group of friends, also mostly teenagers. They went up to Fawn's Leap, which is, you know, like an unsanctioned but not, like, fenced off or anything swimming hole in the Catterskill Creek in between Hunter and Catskill. They were swimming. Two of the teens jumped off a cliff, which, you know, was like 30 feet above the water, hit the water, like near the waterfall, because the waterfall spills into the swimming hole, and essentially just got sucked under. A third person who was not part of the Brooklyn party, there was like another group at the swimming hole, saved one of them, like swam in, like dragged them out, saved their life. The second person drowned, though, the 16-year-old from Brooklyn, yeah.
And that was the first time since 2019 that someone died there?
Yeah, in 2019, a West Point cadet died there, I believe. There's like various ways people get injured there, but he was like hanging off one of the cliff faces. I don't know why. I mean, he intended to, but he like the rock crumbled and he fell and passed away. And then like there's just been this cluster of incidents at Fawn's Leap in the last 2 weeks. I don't have a huge amount of information on the one of them. But there needed to be a rope rescue because, like, Fawn's Leap is it's like a waterfall spilling into, like, a deep pool, and then the pool is ringed by cliffs. So this guy, like, got injured most likely from a fall, and to get him into an ambulance, they needed to, like, rappel down one of the cliff faces and then, like, get him back up to the ambulance. And, you know, he survived, yeah. The second incident, which is just crazy... 16 people had to be saved. It took more than 3 hours, 6 or 7 first responder agencies. Essentially what happened is they were on the far side of Catterskill Creek, the near side having Route 23A, where, you know, like they parked or walked down from. The Catterskill Creek rose rapidly, and then a group of people at Fawn's Leap and then a group of people at another swimming hole like a quarter mile away got trapped between like the fast flowing rising water and the cliff faces. So they all had to be rescued. They were all fine, but it was this like massive rescue operation. They needed to shut down 23A, which is like an important thoroughfare, for hours to do it. They just shut down the road again when the poor teen died. Yeah.
And the 16 people incident was basically, it was a afternoon storm that was very, very heavy, and sort of flash flood came. And
yeah, it's a little weird because, like, you know, like I heard this when I talked to the sheriff's deputies and stuff, and then I was checking out some basic weather information because I'm a weather nerd. Eventually talked to a hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Albany. He was, like, well aware of this and had already been researching it, because she's like, oh, I guess there was a rain burst somewhere. And, you know, she had been going over the radar, historical radar images all morning, and she was like, there wasn't, like, that heavy a rainfall upstream. She said, like, between 1 and 2 inches of rain fell that day in the watershed upstream, but that's probably, like, more than actually fell, because there was hail and that like messes with the radar amounts. So there wasn't like an epic amount of rain. There was just enough to push the Catterskill Creek like up enough, and it was already swollen. Like it was already swollen because of former rains, like just enough that it became like way hazardous to cross.
It wasn't another of these beaver dams breaking. We've had an outbreak of those recently here.
Yeah, that's like a weird cluster of problems. Like what it's do you only do about two, that?
But
like find the beavers, you know.
The other big story today is in Hudson.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Hudson Central School District has a new superintendent, Dr. Juliet Pennyman. She just signed a 3-year contract with the school. You know, she seems to have good credentials. She's been, I have not met her, but she's, you know, has a good resume. She was up in Rochester, New York. She had positions more locally. She's, you know, been like a school administrator for a long time. She is replacing Lisa Marie Spindler, who is here, I believe, for only 1 year, and had kind of like a controversial tenure there.
There were some videos with school fights, student fights going on.
Yeah.
Circulating.
I was able to acquire 10 or 11 of these videos, all of which one happened at the junior high school and one was at the senior high school. And there were, like, violent fights. Like, no one was, like, terribly injured, but just, like, these kids, like, trying to hurt each other as much as possible. And also just, you know, you see it, like, teachers around and, you know, I mean, they didn't sign up for this to, like, break up fights, but, you know, they're just, like, at a loss. Like, what am I supposed to do? They're trying to kill each other, and I'm, like, a 25-year-old, like, you know, small... Anyway, so these videos came out. We did not publish the actual videos because they involved minors, but we saw them. The Register Star also acquired the videos. And, you know, there is this uproar, as there is, because of just, like, all these violent incidents. And most of the parents of Hudson's students were not happy with the way she dealt with it.
And part of it was probably she was replacing a very, very long-time beloved supervisor.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always difficult to be the first person after the long-time beloved supervisor, right?
Yeah, to fill those shoes. Marie Stuttmeyer, like, she was there for a long time. And she was, like, I would use the term, like, beloved superintendent. And, you know, I feel that's high praise for a superintendent because, like, I don't know. I don't know. It seems like something most people feel neutral about. Like, yeah, the superintendent.
Or they're
really
upset because of something at their school,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's hard to get good marks, I guess.
So what are you off to next? What is coming up for you?
What is coming up for me? Couple things. I'm actually pursuing this really interesting long-term project. It's not going to come to fruition for a few weeks. But it hasn't been written about, and it's massively important. Bit wonkish, but essentially, the New York City reservoir system, which supplies 9 million people with water, all of New York City, essentially a million people in the Hudson Valley, is undergoing the largest construction project in its entire history. It is a project that took 21 years of planning. And essentially what they have to do is they have to shut off the aqueduct that supplies 60% of New York City with its drinking water for 8 months.
For 8 months? What is New York City going to do?
Well, they've planned for this, thankfully. It's like the reservoir system, it's like an architectural marvel, and I can't believe that, you know, they started constructing it like more than 100 years ago when they didn't have modern technology. You know, it's crazy. But essentially what they have to do is use other reservoirs in the system. And there's years of, like, you know, shifting how much which reservoir has so much water beforehand. So they allow certain reservoirs to overfill. So they have water to replace the water that would normally be coming through this aqueduct that they're going to have to repair. Because there's giant leaks in it, and there have been since the early 90s.
So how is it going to affect up here? Because the water comes from up here, right?
It does.
Western Greene County, there were all those signs a couple of years ago, they keep our hands off our water or something. I don't remember what the signs were about.
Well, that's just like a long-running issue with, like, certain people on the mountaintop, or a lot of people on the mountaintop. You know, it's
they don't like New York City, and they don't like New York City taking their water.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's...
Or buying their land to protect their water.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, primordial, like, clash, you know, in that it is about the ownership and control of land, and, like, that's something people have always fought over, but it's, you know... local Catskill elected leaders versus the Department of Environmental Protection, which is the New York City agency that owns, like, hundreds of square miles of the Catskills.
I guess the big question is, are the bagels going to taste different?
That's actually an excellent question, because they actually might.
Right, because the water supposedly is why New York City bagels taste the way
they are. Bragging about their bagels and their pizza. But no, you're actually right, because there's a possibility the taste of the water in New York City will change slightly over this 8 months because A, B, and C. But essentially they're using water sources that need to be, like, you know, very lightly treated, whereas, like, the reservoirs that are being shut down, there's not treatment. I mean, honestly, no one's going to notice, but, like, the DEP put out this notice, like, just in case your bagels taste different. They didn't mention bagels, but yeah.
So a year from now, if your bagels taste different, you know, you heard it here. Why?
Like, oh, that's why.
All right. Anything else you want to tell listeners about? We're speaking with Roger Hannigan Gilson, the Times Union Hudson Valley reporter.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, those were kind of the big stories of the last week and kind of what's coming up. Great talking to you.
Yes, it was great visiting, and we'll see you again or hear you again next Thursday too, right?
Yes, you will. It's a recurring thing now.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Next, we have a story about an artist working with insects in Troy. So stay tuned to the WGXC Morning Show.
Hey, this is Ellie, Nature Lab's community science educator. I'm also an artist, and I attend a living art installation called Lawn Lab. So it's part of Nature Lab and the Sanctuary's Eco Art Trail. And this August, I'm really excited to have artist Lisa Schoenberg bringing her project, The Insects Are Present, to Lawn Lab and the Sanctuary. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Ellie. Thanks for having me. So my name is Lisa Schoenberg, and I live here in Troy. I'm a PhD student in the Electronic Arts program at Rensselaer Polytechnic. I am an artist and musician. Specifically, I'm a percussionist, composer, and ecological sound artist. And I'm interested in cryptic sounds, so sounds that are beyond the normal range of human hearing, the typical range of human hearing, and accessing those with technology and making music and sound art with those sounds, with an emphasis on insects.
Nice. Yes, which we'll get to as we start to talk about what you're going to be doing this month. You've got this pretty unique event series coming up at the Sanctuary starting on Friday, August 11th. So what should viewers, or should I say listeners, expect if they sign up to experience The Insects Are Present?
Well, you'll show up at Ellie's ongoing Lawn Lab, and you'll be greeted and given a text score with instructions for what you'll experience and how the steps that you'll go through and suggestions as to how you might focus and attune your senses during the experience. And so you'll wait until it's your turn. One person experiences it at a time, and it's a durational experience. So you're welcome to sit there for up to 15 minutes listening, and you'll have a chance to participate with your own audio at one point.
Amazing. I'm really looking forward to experiencing this myself. From what I know of your work, delving into the acoustic lives of insects is both an art and a science. Can you describe how your background in music and in the sciences brought you to do this work? And maybe a little bit about, like, the mechanics of how you do it and the collaborators you work with, both humans and insects?
Yeah, so I've been a drummer / percussionist since I was a kid. Most recently, that's been in the form of a percussion and electronic ensemble that I direct with my friend Alan Wilson. And for that group, we really looked to soundscape, to environmental sound, whether that's near or away from human-built environments. And that informs our composition process. Some people call this soundscape composition, ecological sound art, ecological music. There's a lot of different terms. And I've also been interested in insects for a long time. I have a background studying them as a biologist. And so at some point, like 7 years ago, this kind of came full circle with some work I did in the Brazilian Amazon, where I began working with some entomologists down there who I still work with to this day, studying ant sound. And I've recently gotten into learning MaxMSP, and that's become a really critical tool, as well as using contact microphones to access these really tiny sounds. Also have been working with exciters to play back sound into the environment. So these systems involve recording and playback. And Max is the tool that kind of brings them all together and modulates in direction of these sounds to create music or sound art. It's funny. Sometimes things are clearly sound art. Other times they might be clearly music because they have a really fixed form. Sound art in general has a less fixed form, is more durational, experiential. But this kind of sits in between both for me.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of experiencing a few of your experiments at Lawn Lab, and I'm wondering if you can describe a little bit like what your setup's like what a contact mic is and what it feels like to kind of set that up and listen.
So a contact microphone is simply a microphone that is focused on picking up vibrational sound as opposed to airborne sound. So sound that moves through surfaces, we call substrate-borne vibration. A lot of insects communicate with vibratory sound. There's a whole field called biotremology, and more broadly ecotremology, and the ecosystem level that's concerned with vibratory communication. And so ants in particular use stridulation, and a lot of this is perceived through vibration by the ants. Cool. There's a whole host of other insects that use this too. So the contact mics are specialized for picking up vibration.
Awesome. And stridulation is like, rather than them verbalizing with vocal cords or something, right? They're actually like rubbing body parts together. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Like a cricket does.
Yeah.
There's a Brazilian instrument called a heiko heiko, and it's kind of like that, a ridged surface and a scraper that moves across.
Yeah, I love being able to zoom into these sound habitats that we would miss otherwise. And I know you've done this research in a wide range of habitats. You mentioned the Brazilian rainforest. I'm wondering how working on an urban lawn in North Central Troy is different and what you hope to learn through the work you're doing this month.
This is a more difficult habitat for insects to live in year round, right? Well, they're not active for a large part of the year. And so that really decreases the abundance and diversity. But there's some species that are really abundant when it's favorable outside. And so that's why I chose to do it at this time of year, because this is a really good time of year as far as the weather goes for insects. So the funny thing is I've been listening to insects more in Brazil than I have here recently. So I'm really excited to focus on where I live and listen here.
Yeah, I have been observing a lot of the pollinators, at least when I walk by Lawn Labs. There's a lot of flowers blooming right now. So I'm excited to know what you find as you get into the kind of soil surface too. One thing that's kind of neat about this series is that you're gonna overlap with the Insects Are Present with some other sanctuary events. So on Saturday, August 12th, folks can sign up to experience your installation during Healing Day at the People's Health Sanctuary. And this is a day where we'll have a range of practitioners who focus on holistic healing, like massage, energy work, medicinal plant, Q&A. And I feel like the Insects Are Present makes a really nice complement to these themes. I know that PHS team is enthusiastic about it too. And I'm curious how you think about it. Are there aspects of sound, both the human and more than human sound, that you'd connect to health and well-being, either in your own work or more generally?
Yeah, definitely. I had a related exhibit recently called Sonic Therapies for Toxic Relations. And that title is based on the fact that I think our relations with insects, or most insects, are being inhabitants of the United States and other capitalist Western cultures, that we have these toxic relations because they're based in fear and avoidance and actually like elimination of insects. And in that, hurting our own health in the process by spraying these chemicals and by creating monoculture habitats that are not healthy for anyone, any species. And so there's, I think, really like diverse benefits in taking time to breathe and listen to insects and reconsider our relations with them so that we all can have a more mutually beneficial experience together. So there's that. And then there's also just like stress reduction, because I think people just get freaked out about insects. And so it's learning to breathe and appreciate them. I'm really excited to be doing it at your research site and at the sanctuary/nature lab, because it's an accessible site in general. It's in a community as opposed to in a separate protected park that's far away from residential areas. It's right adjacent to where people live. So there's this opportunity to get to know the insects that cohabitate in your neighborhood with you. So I'm really excited about that aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that aspect too. I love that it's like right by a community garden and there's just a sidewalk running right by and an alleyway where kids play. And I know if people are interested in experiencing this, they can go to the event page for the sanctuary and see all the dates we'll be running the installation. They can sign up for a slot. You said there will be some walk-in or day-of slots available too. Maybe as we wrap up, can you tell us a bit about the range of times you've chosen for the installation and why? Because there's some kind of unusual ones that might be attractive depending on the kind of person you are.
Yeah, so depending on what kind of person you are, you can come. One day there's a sunrise session from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. There's another session that's for sunset till 11 p.m. And there are several during different parts of the afternoon and morning. So the idea is to sort of document a full range of the scope of insect soundscapes, of these cryptic insect soundscapes at the site, as opposed to going only at one part of the day, because there are changes.
Helping to organize a local event, and if you do that and send it our way soon enough, folks like me will be reading it on the radio at 90.7 FM, and people will see it around the world in the WGXC community calendar at wgxc.org. Thursday, August 10th at 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. in the public square in Hudson, it's time for the Hudson Thursday Market, every Thursday this summer, off of Warren and 7th and Columbia Streets, Public Square, for the Hudson Thursday Market. Thursday, August 10th, Ankrum Opera House also has plein air plays, three site-specific new works. Paulette Clark is making Jamaican curry chicken at the Cooking Up Community event Thursday, August 10th at the Hudson Area Library at 6 p.m. And Thursday, August 10th, Huntress and Holder of Hands, Footings, and Strawberry Runners are all performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. The show runs roughly from 8 to 11 p.m. And WGXC should have a live web stream of the whole affair, and from 8 to 9, I believe the show will be on the FM 90.7 FM signal. That's Huntress and Holder of Hands and Footings and Strawberry Runners performing Thursday, August 10th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Friday, August 11th, the Hudson Sankofa Black Arts and Cultural Festival begins, put on by Operation Unite New York. It is a weekend of events. Saturday is the parade. At 2 p.m., the parade steps off. There's also the Herd Jazz Band, the Kumba Dancers, Dunan Khan Drummers, Dancers from Guinea, the Kasoka Stiltwalkers, and more. That's Friday and Saturday in Hudson, the Hudson Sankofa Black Arts and Cultural Festival. Friday, August 11th, there's a community spaghetti dinner, linguine with white and red clam sauce at the American Legion in Greenville from 4:30 to 7 p.m. It's eat in or take out. Friday, August 11th, the Blackbird Info Shop and Cafe in Kingston is hosting Night Fountain and Dylan Nirvana for performances. New York Nut Growers Association's summer meeting is open to all on Saturday, August 12th at the Cornell Cooperative Extension Columbia and Greene County's Agroforestry Resource Center on Route 23, just down from the Wave Farm. That's from 8:30 a.m. on Saturday to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, the Saugerties Artist Studio Tour is open. There's 37 locations to visit. Go to saugertiesarttour.org or see it, the link on the WGXC community calendar, to find out more. Catskill Saturday Ukulele Jam is every week from 1:30 to 3 p.m. at the Catskill United Methodist Church. Some WGXC ukulele folks will be there, and you can come too. Sunday, there's a traditional Irish music session if you want to jam that way from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Shamrock House. That's every Sunday, the Open Irish Jam. And these events and many more are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
The war against Ukraine that's being waged by Russia, and with some of the best people in the area that I know are leading a group called Medical Relief for the Ukraine, as I've mentioned on the show, and we've had them here a couple of times, and they are doing such great work in providing funds for various types of medical relief for the effort for Ukraine to maintain and expel the Russian aggression that is happening against them on a daily basis. And I am very happy to have back on the air with us Irena Johnson. She's one of the founders of Medical Relief for Ukraine. And along with her is Olena Lake, one of her volunteers, new volunteer, I think, from Albany. Olena, Irena, how are you?
Yes. Hi, Randall.
I'm okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting.
So great to have you guys on the air. And, you know, again, you know, it is such a global tragedy what is happening to your home country of the Ukraine. And again, the support and the things that you guys are doing to send back resources in order to keep people healthy and have them be able to respond to all the injuries that are happening daily is such a great thing. For those who don't know about your organization, Irena, can you just kind of give a recap and tell people about Medical Relief for the Ukraine and why you felt compelled to start it along with others?
Yes, Randall, thank you very much. As I told before in our program about medical relief, we started in February 22 and never stopped since then. And our last event, Ukrainian Gala in Racebrook Lodge, has a tremendous success. We have great thanks to you, Randall, for a beautiful picture you made. Great thanks to Melville family for financial support and for inviting guests. Big thanks to owners of Racebrook Lodge, Casey, David, with family and teams. We have special, very special dinner. We have special speaker, Malcolm Nance, and people from the people, our partners. We are proud to be a partner of rehabilitation centers program in Ukraine. One of them is operated in Irpin, and we collected money for new one in Lviv. And we are proud to report that $37,282 were raised and transferred to Ukrainian injured soldiers, which are under rehabilitation in Ukraine.
That
so we
tremendous.
Have special guests. We actually had two injured soldiers, our special guests. It's Mikhailo Nalivayko, Alexander Tatarchuk, and Irina Vashuk-Despisio, who runs this program. So it was a good success with you guys' support, because the guests and the performers make it happens. Thanks.
Well, you know, it was just, well, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, we do what we can. And, you know, this is one event of many. You know, we met and we talked about, I talked to your pastor, your priest, at the church. And then we got to know each other and more about your organization. And then it really just kind of took off from there. And you guys are so persistent. I mean, you guys are you sell veroniki, which is pierogies, in right. You know, that we know here, but I guess it's you guys call it veroniki, and they're delicious, and you guys sell them very often. You got your food markets. You are really out there raising money, and as you said, you've done so since the very beginning. And I know you have great volunteers. What is it in your heart that keeps you and the volunteers out there? I mean, it's almost every weekend that there's a whole group of volunteers somewhere raising money.
Yes, and I think we can ask Alina, as she is a long-time volunteer communicating with different Ukrainian organizations in the capital region. We invited her to tell her particular point of view. Alina has her own YouTube channel. And let Alina, what make you to be persistent and put all your efforts 24/7 to Ukrainian affair?
First of all, it is very scary. It is very important to support Ukraine, and my pretty much adult life was I was born and raised in Ukraine, and my life was there. My family is most of my family is there. My friends and my classmates are there, so I am communicating almost on a daily basis with them because it is a difficult time. And with their support, and I was able to connect with some volunteering organization in Ukraine. It was Sparta, and I was helping directly to the for humanitarian purposes to army. They need everything. They need binoculars. They need some socks, very simple socks.
Right.
And stuff.
Especially in the beginning.
Some t-shirts.
Yeah.
Yes, especially in the beginning. The beginning. And still, because everything is burning in there, as you know.
Right.
Even food. So that is why, and I start communicating with frontline defense people. So I know their opinion, and I know how it is important to them to be heard, to be supported. And it is very appreciated by them what we are doing here. And it influences us. It gives us more enthusiasm. So they know that they are not alone in their fight, and we know that we are standing for them and they are standing for us, because Ukraine is fighting for worldwide democratic values. It is fighting for all of us. And I'm very thankful for you to express my and many others' opinion in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. And, you know, I have a different question for you guys. You know,
please.
And what do you feel that the influence media has had on this war?
I can answer this question. You know, this war is the first full-scale war in 21st century, and it is going now in the full reality of informational presence. So, and this informational presence makes significance in this war, and that is why this war is called hybrid war. And information is very, very much influential here. That is why we are trying to spread the correct information. We're trying to resist the Kremlin's propaganda, which is sneaking all around the area and which is supported by Mr. Putin, and which is very damaging and dangerous for public opinion and all other influences. As we know, we are a democratic country, the United States, and our public is very influential. That is why the opinion of people is very much important. That is, and this is what we are doing.
You
that
know,
is
I,
why
I,
we are trying to help in informational sense as well.
Today we're tuning into Woodstock's The Band. This is Stage Fright.
Just one.